We're continuing chapter 16 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. And they were all in the Weasley household, Christmas Eve. Ron fell asleep almost immediately, but Harry delved into his trunk and pulled out his copy of Advanced Potion Making before getting into bed. There, he turned its pages, searching until he finally found, at the front of the book, the date it had been published. He was nearly 50 years old. Neither his father nor his father's friends had been at Hogwarts 50 years ago. Feeling disappointed, Harry threw the book back into his trunk, turned off the lamp.
That's not true.
I think they must have been there, like, 40 years before?
Oh, okay.
I don't know. But he doesn't realize that doesn't mean...
You're right.
Anyways, feeling disappointed, Harry threw the book back into his trunk, turned off the lamp, and rolled over, thinking of werewolves and Snape, Stan Shunpike, and the Half-Blood Prince, and finally falling into an uneasy sleep full of creeping shadows and the cries of bitten children. "She's got to be joking!" Harry woke with a start to find a bulging stocking lying over the end of his bed. He put his glasses on and looked around. The tiny window was almost completely obscured with snow, and in front of it, Ron was sitting bolt upright and examining what appeared to be a thick gold chain. "What's that?" he asked Harry. "It's from Lavender," said Ron, sounding revolted. "She can't honestly think I'd wear..." Harry looked closely and let out a shout of laughter. Dangling from the chain in large gold letters were the words, "My sweetheart." "Nice," he said. "Classy. You should definitely wear it in front of Fred and George." "If you tell them," said Ron, shoving the necklace out of sight under his pillow. I'll... "Stutter at me?" said Harry, grinning. "Come on, would I?" "How could she think I'd like something like that, though?" Ron demanded of thin air, looking rather shocked. "Well, think back," said Harry. "Have you ever let it slip you'd like to go out in public with the words, my sweetheart, round your neck?" "Well, we don't really talk much," said Ron. "It's mainly... snogging," said Harry. "Well, yeah," said Ron. He hesitated a moment and then said, "Is Hermione really going out with McLagan?" "I don't know," said Harry. "They were at Slughorn's party together, but I don't think it went that well." Ron looked slightly more cheerful as he delved deeper into his stocking. Harry's presents included a sweater with a large golden snitch worked into the front, hand-knitted by Mrs. Weasley, a large box of Weasley's Wizard Wheezes products from the twins, and a slightly damp, moldy-smelling package that came from a label reading, "To Master, from Creature." Harry stared at it. "Do you reckon this is safe to open?" "Can't be anything dangerous. All our mail's still being searched at the Ministry," said Ron, as though eyeing the parcel suspiciously. "I didn't think of giving Creature anything. Do people usually give their house elves Christmas presents?" asked Harry, prodding the parcel cautiously. "Hermione would," said Ron. "Let's wait and see what it is before you start feeling guilty." A moment later, Harry had given a loud yell and leapt out of his camp bed. The package contained a large number of maggots. "Nice," said Ron, roaring with laughter. "Very thoughtful." "I'd rather have them than that necklace," said Harry, which sobered Ron up at once. Everyone was wearing new sweaters when they all sat down for Christmas lunch. Everyone except Fleur, on whom it appeared Mrs. Weasley had not wanted to waste one, and Mrs. Weasley herself, who was sporting a brand new midnight blue witch's hat, glittering with what looked like tiny star-like diamonds, and a spectacular golden necklace. "Fred and George gave them to me. Aren't they beautiful?" "Well, we appreciate you more and more, Mum, now that we're washing our own socks," said George, waving an airy hand. "Parsnips, Remus?" "Harry, you've got a maggot in your hair," said Ginny cheerfully, leaning across the table to pick it out. Harry felt goosebumps erupt on his neck that had nothing to do with the maggot. "Oh, horrible," said Fleur with an affected little shudder. "Yes, isn't it?" said Ron. "Gravy, Fleur?" In his eagerness to help her, he knocked the gravy boat flying. Bill waved his wand and the gravy soared up into the air and returned meekly to the boat. "You're as bad as a Tonks," said Fleur to Ron when she had finished kissing Bill and thanks. "She's always knocking." "I invited dear Tonks to come down today," said Mrs. Weasley, setting down the carrots with unnecessary force and glaring at Fleur. "But she wouldn't come. Have you spoken to her lately, Remus?" "No, I haven't been in contact with anybody very much," said Lupin. "But Tonks has got her own family to go to, hasn't she?" "Hmm," said Mrs. Weasley. "Maybe. I got the impression she was planning to spend Christmas alone, actually." She gave Lupin an annoyed look as though it was all his fault she was getting Fleur for her daughter-in-law instead of Tonks. But Harry, glancing across at Fleur, who was now feeding Bill bits of turkey off her own fork, thought that Mrs. Weasley was fighting a long-lost battle. He was, however, reminded of a question he had with regards to Tonks, who better to ask than Lupin, the man who knew all about Patronuses. "Tonks's Patronus has changed its form," he told him. "Snape said so anyway. I didn't know that could happen. Why would your Patronus change?" Lupin took his time chewing his turkey and swallowing before saying slowly, "Sometimes a great shock, an emotional upheaval." "It looked big and it had four legs," said Harry, struck by a sudden thought and lowering his voice. "Hey, it couldn't be..." "Arthur," said Mrs. Weasley suddenly. She had risen from her chair. Her hand was pressed over her heart and she was staring out into the kitchen window. "Arthur, it's Percy." "What?" Mr. Weasley looked around. Everybody looked quickly at the window. Ginny stood up for a better look, and there, sure enough, was Percy Weasley striding across the snowy yard, his horn-rimmed glasses glinting in the sunlight. He was not, however, alone. "Arthur, he's with the minister." And sure enough, the man Harry had seen in the Daily Prophet was following along in Percy's wake, limping slightly, his mane of graying hair and black cloak flecked with snow. Before any of them could say anything, before Mr. and Mrs. Weasley could do more than exchange stunned looks, the back door opened, and there stood Percy. There was a moment's painful silence, and then Percy said, rather stiffly, "Merry Christmas, Mother." "Oh, Percy," said Mrs. Weasley, and she threw herself into his arms. Rufus Scrimgeour paused in the doorway, leaning on his walking stick, and smiling as he observed this affecting scene. "You must forgive this intrusion," he said, when Mrs. Weasley looked around at him, beaming and wiping her eyes. "Percy and I were in the vicinity, working, you know, and he couldn't resist dropping in and seeing you all." But Percy showed no signs of wanting to greet any of the rest of the family. He stood, poker straight and awkward-looking, and stared over everybody else's heads. Mr. Weasley, Fred, and George were all observing him, stony-faced. "Please, come in, sit down, Minister," flustered Mrs. Weasley, straightening her hat. "Have a little perky, or tooting, I mean—" "No, no, my dear Molly," said Scrimgeour. Harry guessed he had checked her name with Percy before they entered the house. "I don't want to intrude. Wouldn't be here at all if Percy hadn't wanted to see you all so badly." "Oh, Percy," said Mrs. Weasley tearfully, reaching up to kiss him. "We've only looked in for 5 minutes. So I'll have a stroll around the yard while you catch up with Percy." "No, no, I assure you, I don't want to butt in." "Well, if anybody cared to show me your charming garden. Ah, that young man's finished. Why doesn't he take a stroll with me?" The atmosphere around the table changed perceptibly. Everyone looked from Scrimgeour to Harry. Nobody seemed to find Scrimgeour's pretense that he did not know Harry's name convincing, or find it natural he should be chosen to accompany the minister around the garden when Ginny, Fleur, and George also had clean plates. "Yeah, all right," said Harry, into the silence. He was not fooled. For all Scrimgeour's talk, they had just been in the area, that Percy wanted to look up his family. This must be the real reason they had to come, so that Scrimgeour could speak to Harry alone. "It's fine," he said quietly as he passed Lupin, who had half risen from his chair. "Fine," he added, as Mr. Weasley opened his mouth to speak. "Wonderful," said Scrimgeour, standing back to let Harry pass through the door ahead of him. "We'll just take a turn around the garden, and Percy and I will be off. Carry on, everyone." And I think we'll stop there. I hope you like that, my baby kitten. It's bedtime for the kitten. Sleep well, darling. I love you so much. Good night, beautiful.